All right, good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, April 5th, 2016, and this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everybody. It is 27 degrees and partly sunny here in upstate New York. I am hoping that the worst of winter is over. We actually had some warm weather here for a couple weeks, at least relatively decent for March. And then we went into April and we hit full frontal winter again. I was supposed to get down to 19 last night. But I'm thinking from here on out, I saw 40s and rain for the rest of the week. So let's hope that's what's happening because my daffodils are crying. All right. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show, it was all about Kurzweil. Titled the show, Ray Kurzweil is Scary. Immortality and Blood Nanosensors. Talking about all kinds of crazy things, but mostly about Ray Kurzweil. And I pointed out many, many, many reasons why the man scares me beyond belief. He comes off as this little Mr. Innocuous with his Grecian formula. Look how young I'm getting. And he's smiling the whole way. He's telling you to insert nanobots into Johnny's brain to connect to the internet and live forever. I mean, it's just a very frightening thing. I talked about Kurzweil yesterday. And some of the strangeness that I've learned about him over the years paying attention. And there was one thing, and I guess it's not so strange. I mean, if you lose a parent, of course you're going to miss your parent. But Kurzweil, his big push in a lot of this longevity technology and uploading and downloading yourself to the cloud is all about being able to bring back his lost dad. His dad that passed away. He has all these pictures and information about his dad, and he wants to build a database to be able to then download him at will and interact. I did have a story about that. We'll start here because then I came across a lot of disturbing stuff that has been queued up here for a few days that I think we're going to talk about today. This is from 2012 out of Business Insider. Google hires a man who believes he will bring his dead father back to life. And not, like I said, not that that is a bad thing, not that people, maybe, anybody ever see Pet Sematary? Read the book by Stephen King. Bringing dead people back to life was never a good thing in my book, but, you know, I mean, anyone who's lost a loved one absolutely knows that there are times when, you know, you really would do anything to see them again or to speak to them again. There's a hole in your heart, and it's, you know, a very long, painful grief period to go through. And I don't think you ever really feel fully whole again, especially if it was someone extremely close to you that you were with for a good part of your life. So I'm not going to fault Ray for his somewhat, maybe quote unquote, noble feelings of wanting to bring his dad back to life as a son. But on the other hand, Ray Kurzweil has taken this to an obsession. Ray Kurzweil has taken this resurrection, this living forever, this being a part of the cloud, making yourself part of the digital monster that's growing. You know, I think back to Tron back in the 80s, that movie where the guy got sucked into the video game, and I hate comparing it to films, except that, you know, I realize as I get older and older that there were films that I saw in the 80s that definitely shaped my way of thinking in my older years. And that was one of them, Tron. And in the 80s, when Tron got sucked into the machine, it wasn't such a nice world inside of the Tron world. They had to race and they got killed. It was kind of like a Running Man scenario. And, you know, in more and more that we look at how this future promised utopia that in my eyes is going to be a dystopia marches forward, we're starting to see the same thing. I mean, this isn't about freedom, as they're going to try to tell you, oh, you don't have to work anymore because, you know, the robots took all the jobs. So you'll be free to think and philosophize and do whatever you want and live life like we should have. That's how they're painting it. That's how they're selling it. That's not how it's going to turn out. And I'm going to illustrate that today as we look at some of these news stories and who is involved. They can tell you all they want, but I'm telling you, I already see the dark, scary hallway, and there's that big, dark door with bloody handprints on it at the end of the hall that I'm kicking and screaming, and they're dragging us down there. Don't do it. I'm telling you, don't do it. All right. Anyway, back to Kurzweil. So, yes, Kurzweil is hired by Google. They are fully well aware that his big push for the last how many ever years that he's been doing this in a Singularity University, and he's been a full-blown transhumanist for a long time. They hired him knowing this. They hired Google. Google hired Kurzweil knowing that his wish is to upload himself ultimately, as well as others, and be able to bring people back from the dead. His other wish is to live forever, longevity. I mean, they were just such a perfect match. So anyway, to the story. A lot of what they build in Silicon Valley these days is pretty mundane. Sexting apps. Oh, yeah, I love how they throw that in there. Social games and new ways to share things over the internet. So it is pretty exciting when you hear about somebody who has some really crazy ideas for what the future might hold. One such person is a new Google hire named Ray Kurzweil. Like, I guess apparently Business Insider had never heard of Kurzweil before he got hired by Google. You know, and actually in some of the stuff I was reading yesterday, a lot of people didn't know who Kurzweil was. I knew who Kurzweil was, and he scared me for a very long time. I just couldn't even believe when they announced that they were making him the director of engineering in their artificial intelligence and language division at Google. I told you guys, that is like the unholy trinity. We now have Ray Kurzweil, DARPA, and Google all working together. And now we see it. Now, I mean, back a few weeks ago, we dug pretty deep into some of the connections that Google has at the upper echelon at the federal level. And their tentacles are everywhere. Google and the feds are butt patting and rubbing more than you could ever imagine. It's all buttoned up. You know, all this stuff, we think we're all free. No. Google is the, what did Bill Clinton call it? When he was calling for somebody to be in charge of the truthfulness on the internet, he called for a private company, a public company, not a government entity, so nobody could cry censorship, to be able to scan the internet and make sure that facts on web pages were true. Well, lo and behold, just 5 years later, Google announces their truth algorithm. Maybe it was even four, because I think that actually was announced last year. Their truth algorithm and their knowledge vault of all their truthful information that not only are they pointing their algorithm to determine whether or not you have truthful information on your website, but they're also using a similar concept. I don't know if it's the same database, but it might be. Might be, because, you know, remember, they own YouTube as well, and they have databases of images they're using to teach their AI bots from YouTube. But there's a repository of data also that is being utilized to teach AI. And AI is where we really need to be concerned. Artificial intelligence, this deep learning. All right, let's get back to Raya. Ray, this is some of Ray's projects. The geeks among you already know who Ray Kurzweil is, so he must have been deemed geek. Says, but I only learned about him from a Bloomberg Business Week story by Ashley Vance, and this is the person from Business Insider. In it, Vance writes about Kurzweil's plans to bring his dead father back to life, help humanity, quote, live long enough to live forever, unquote, and to transcend biology. Ding, ding. There's all the synthetic biology that we have everywhere. We're going to look at that today, too. as well as engineer the quote-unquote singularity, which is, in Vance's words, the moment when superintelligent machines light up with something approximating life and either destroy humanity, yes, or carry it to unimaginable heights. Now, these are the goals of the man that Google hired to put in charge of their engineering division working on artificial intelligence and language acquisition. How disturbing is that to you? Yet, it's gone very much under the radar. When he first got hired, there were a few stories. A few people said, ooh, whoa. And then most people said, oh, look, he's an inventor. Cool, he wants to make us live forever. And they just let it go. But we found out that when Kurzweil first got that job, he said he pretty much had an unlimited budget. They were just giving up the store. Go do your thing, Ray, Mr. Futurist Psychopath, who comes up with crazy discoveries and pretty good at determining what the future is going to hold. Yeah, they gave it up to Ray. So anyway, the story doesn't say much more. I mean, this was just kind of a short little blurb, but I mean, if we really wanted to read about Kurzweil, we could go hit that Bloomberg article. The Ray Kurzweil Show, now at the Googleplex. Google hires the famed inventor as its director of engineering. Among the stranger things that Ray Kurzweil will say to your face is that he intends to bring his father back to life. The famed inventor has a storage locker full of memorabilia, family photographs, letters, even utility bills tied to his father, Frederick, who died in 1970. Someday, Kurzweil hopes to feed this data trove into a computer that will reconstruct a virtual rendering of his dear old dad. There is a lot of suffering in the world, Kurzweil once explained. Some of it can be overcome if we had the right solutions. Kurzweil, then 64, back in 2012, so add 4 years to that, he's 68 now, has spent much of the past 40 years exploring his theories on life extension and other matters from a lab in Boston. And he is now taking his show on the road. In mid-December of 2012, Kurzweil announced he's moving to California to begin his new job as director of engineering at Google. He will work on language processing, machine learning, and other projects. I am thrilled, he says, to be teaming up with Google to work on some of the hardest problems in computer science so we can turn the next decade's unrealistic visions into reality, says Kurzweil on his website. He is not the first senior technology celebrity hired at Google. Internet pioneer Vint Cerf, we've talked about him before, shows up at events in three-piece suits as a tech evangelist for the search giant, while Hal Varian, founding dean of the School of Information at the University of California at Berkeley, is now chief economist. It's the first I heard of that. And, you know, we're going to talk about Berkeley and the University of California University system and how they are connected to the machine, Lawrence Livermore Laboratory, Texas A&M University. I mean, there are all these institutions that we've talked about. They come up time and time again as part of the money sprinkling institutions. Actually, well, they're not the DARPA sprinkling money to the institutions to get our children to do their bidding and create their mad science gone man. Says there are some practical reasons Kurzweil makes sense at Google. Like I said, good, of course Kurzweil makes sense at Google, but talk about like the scariest thing ever. You know, I mentioned this before, how Google back in the day when this was all still new and we all were running down that path of the dangling carrot and the wonderful promises of the future, Google was one of those companies that everybody aspired to go to. Google as well as Microsoft, remember. They had this sense of breaking the mold of the old style, stodgy corporate America. And they were startups. Microsoft wasn't, but Microsoft was in Silicon Valley, so they were allowed to act like startups. People running around in bare feet. you know, sleeping under their desks with masseuses and video games. And they were showing how wonderful it was because by valuing your employees and treating them like humans and having a work-life balance, you supposedly had more productive, creative employees. That was really where that culture came from. So to have someone like Kurzweil, who's been so on the edge for so long, and Kurzweil never gave a shit if anyone cared about him or thought he was a tinfoil hat-wearing lunatic, because he is. But he's a smart cookie. And a lot of things that he said would come true have, and he's built all kinds of technologies that now we take for granted, such as OCR technology for scanning. You know, he built his text-to-speech software for blind people and reading, and he did sound with a Kurzweil organ. And he really has been pushing this merging man with machine for a really long time, and it's starting to happen. So it made a lot of sense for a company like Google to be very interested in the slightly lunatic brainiac that has all these great ideas, especially when Google has all this money to put into these, whatever they call them, moonshot projects. Just like Regina Duggan and DARPA Dan from DARPA that they brought over to Google. They are also working in the moonshots area with all these mad science gone mad projects. Anyway, back to this. There's some practical reasons Kurzweil makes sense at Google. He was coding as a youngster and taught computers to play music and predict the best colleges for high school students. And later he built a line of sophisticated music synthesizers and early scanners. And then worked on artificial intelligence software for Wall Street equities traders. Well, that's a new one. I did not know that piece. Ray Kurzweil is the best person I know at predicting future of artificial intelligence, says Bill Gates. Ding! Microsoft co-founder. Kurzweil's body of work is intellectual red meat for Googlers who envision smartphones as brain extenders. Yeah, well, we talked about that. Smartphones as many things, not only brain extenders, but as biometric sensors, being able to Fitbit you here till Tuesday until those nano Fitbits get in your blood like we talked about yesterday, the end of the show. Imagine your brain being augmented by Google, the search engine's co-founder and chief executive officer Larry Page said in a 2004 interview. Page is another one of the lunatics. Yes, imagine your brain being augmented by Google. And hey, Ray Kurzweil was the guy to do that. For example, says Page, you think about something and your cell phone could whisper the answer into your ear. Oh, that's a good thing to be teaching children. Tell them not to cheat. Now you can cheat with your cell phone. Top-selling neuroscience book on Amazon is Kurzweil's How to Create a Mind, The Secret of Human Thought Revealed, released in November of 2012. And Kurzweil's previous books promise ways to live long enough to live forever and the path for humans to transcend biology. In his brain book, he discusses efforts to build computers that mimic the architecture of the human mind and eventually to construct machines that surpass our mortal limits. He closes by writing, quote, waking up the universe and then intelligently deciding its fate by infusing it with our human intelligence in its non-biological form is our destiny. Who are you, Ray, to decide what the destiny of the human race is? Honestly, we are allowing Ray Kurzweil and Google and Microsoft and Facebook and all these other tech industries that have now merged with the government, that have now merged with precision medicine, all through this DARPA Connect sprinkle dollars that are all paid for with taxpayer money. We've allowed them to take control of the future of humanity. Yeah, we have, guys. We absolutely have. And they have no fear. They have no fear. They are driving this truck at as fast as it could go, pedal to the metal. All stops out because whoever gets that golden key, whoever finds the chalice filled with the fountain of youth is going to be one rich mother and is going to be able to control who lives and who dies. That's why this race to the end is getting billionaire sprinkle funding. And, you know, a lot of this research that's going on is all happening kind of under the covers, being funded privately by rich billionaires and investment groups. It isn't by any type of federal National Institute of Health or whatever, though we found out Tommy Insel, former National Institute of Mental Health director, has gone over to where? Oh, Google. So have some of the best brain scientists at some of the biggest universities in the United States have gone to where? Oh, Google, to work on the Brain Project. Anyway, back to Kurzweil's statement. We'll read that again just so the little goosebumps will pop up on your arm again. Kurzweil closes by writing, quote, "Waking up the universe," I do have goosebumps, "waking up the universe and then intelligently deciding its fate by infusing it with our human intelligence in its non-biological form is our destiny. So suck your brains out. Put them in the synthetic cloud," quote, hence non-biological form, human intelligence. "And that has become your destiny, to be trapped and owned, backed up and copied by the machine. No, thank you." Statements like these have turned Kurzweil into a quasi-religious figure. Quasi-religious. You know, and when we had read an interview not too long ago about Kurzweil talking about uploading you to the cloud and how you could live forever in the cloud and see all of your former family members who have died and now whose consciousnesses are uploaded to the cloud. And this is future. This isn't just uploading and downloading Nana and her memories. They are talking uploading and downloading your actual personality so you could exist and then download yourself at will into a new robot body in the future. I know it all sounds insane. Anyone who has not looked into any of this goes, wow, this chick's a lunatic. Click, turn the show off. But no, this is what the lunatics are planning for the future. And I mean, like I said before, when Kurzweil was sitting in his little corner, dark, dank little corner in Boston, you know, yammering on about his plans for the future, everybody kind of pointed and laughed. You know, we always looked at Kurzweil and said, oh, yeah, he's a smart guy, but he's a little bit crazy. But they gave him an unlimited budget, and they moved him to Google, and now he's in Silicon Valley, and he's got the ear of all the psychopaths who want to rule the world. And they put Kurzweil on a pedestal and said, go nuts, little Ray. Go nuts. We'll help you bring your dreams to fruition. Ray has turned into a quasi-religious figure. You know, he used to be in the transhumanist movement. He was the granddaddy, Singularity, his website, Singularity University. That was who everybody looked to because Ray was like a prophet. He would come out and he'd talk about the future. But now Ray has been put in charge and we should be afraid, be very afraid. Statements like these have turned Kurzweil into a quasi-religious figure and he is the grand prophet, oh there we go, of the singularity. The moment when super intelligent machines light up with something approximating life and either destroy humanity or carry it to unimaginable heights. Well, those unimaginable heights will not be for you and me, like we've talked about many times. We will be the guinea pigs. Version 1.0s. 1.1, 1.2, whoops. We had some bugs in that one. 1.3. I mean, don't ever be a 1.0, even a 2.0. I've told you guys that. Never turns out well. Buggy software. Kurzweil travels the world preaching the optimistic vision of this future, and thousands of people have bought into his message. This movement comes most alive in Silicon Valley, where an army of super wealthy technologists and investors had decided to put their fortunes and their smarts into bringing the singularity to fruition. Ding, ding, ding. Telling you guys, it is a brainwashing technique. Anyone who was a tech, who's very into technology, like I mentioned yesterday, I was there. I was in that cult. It's just a way of seeing things. You believe that the technology is the way to save the human race. It's going to make everything better for us. It's not, guys. There's a dark side, and the dark side is the people who are in charge. And though everything has a light side, I mean, sure, we could cure disease and, fix the environment and clean up all the toxic spills and the horrible shit we poured everywhere and killed things with synthetic biology. But the fact that they're letting this stuff go in the environment and in our bodies as experiments, and we're doing Petri dish real time, and they all have these evil looks on their faces going, oh, just wait. And everybody is looking at ways to cash in. Cha-ching. Don't think that there is really even a morsel of foresight, a morsel of somebody going, hey, you know, maybe we should come up with a plan and be really careful in our research, because they're all thinking that if they don't do it first, I was reading some stuff in the transhumanist news group. I joined a new one. I'm in now in two transhumanist news groups, and I go in there and lurk and read the posts and read the stories and get myself all horrified just to see how these people think and what they're ticking. I mean, I am absolutely not in their camp anymore. But one of the things that I am seeing echoing over and over again is the fact that if we don't do it, the Chinese are going to do it. And we want to be the ones in charge of this technology. So it's all balls out. Let's get it done, whatever it takes. Even if a few people get hurt along the way. And that is not the way to do responsible science and technology. That is not the way to be moral or ethical, to proceed forward when it affects everyone. It affects the entire planet. It affects all of the future generations of not only humanity, but all life on this planet. You know, we have something, some crazy thing. We saw all the CRISPR technology now slicing and dicing in your garage, in your kitchen. You know, some of this stuff gets out. Somebody makes something dangerous, gets their hands on a dangerous microbe that they could slice and dice in their DIY genetic engineering kit. Rubs it on a couple doorknobs at an international airport and it gets out. You know, that is going to change all of history. And this is like every bad, scary, nasty, horrifying flick I have ever seen in my lifetime, times 100 right now, because it's not just one threat. We have 10,000 threats coming from every direction, and it's not all of this prattle that's going on in the news. You know, all that crap, you know what? Same shit, different day. All right, we're bombing somebody. All right, we're invading somebody. All right, well, another 100 people killed by a drone. I mean, I feel bad about all that stuff, but I've been following that stuff at a micro level for so many years now that I am totally 100% desensitized. I read it, and it's like, you know, the facts remain the same, just the details change. It's the same idiots in charge. It's the same playbook. They're playing the same game over and over. But what people aren't seeing is this underbelly that's happening. And the technology was always quiet. Technology, people always bought into, especially if it was new and better and it made your life easier, because people tend to be lazy. We love convenience. We learned that one of the things that you could become addicted to with dopamine is what? Oh, convenience. We looked at that a while back. Convenience is a dopamine creator because it gives you pleasure. It gives you pleasure when you don't have to do as much work and you have more free time. So anyway, this movement of the future with Ray Kurzweil has been funded by a lot of wealthy, rich tech titans who are all moving into middle age, and they all now want to live forever. Larry Page of Google gave Kurzweil more than $250,000 to help start Singularity University. He did? I didn't know that either. So Google helped fund Singularity University? No way. That's been around for quite a while. Anyway, Page gave Kurzweil more than $250,000 to help start Singularity University, a graduate school of sorts located on a NASA-managed property in Mountain View, California, a couple of miles from Google's campus. It's on a NASA-managed property to boot. Look at, they're all in bed, guys. For the last 3 years, so this was written in 2012, so this has been since 2009. SingU, as it is known, has held programs for students and entrepreneurs in which they hear from the world's leading thinkers in areas such as biotech, robotics, and artificial intelligence, all of our favorite topics here on Before the First Cup. The university is anything but traditional, though. Students only come for 10-week sessions. And rather than complete a degree, they create a startup company. The coursework is mostly straightforward. And though the occasional lecturer will vow to live for 700 years, I find a mixture of very interesting work and technology that may provide disruptive opportunities for innovation. Like we said, disruptive technologies are what it's all about today. Just about anything in technology that they are developing right now is going to turn into a disruptive technology, disruptive being, taking the world and turning it on its head. Everything you know and love, your routines, well, some point in the future, they're just going to be tipped over on that chessboard, and we're all going to be bumping into walls going, what the hell happened? Where do we go from here? This robot's taking all the jobs and universal basic income. Yeah, I was reading more stuff today. There's a big article, and I don't think we're going to get into it today, but maybe by the end of the week. There was a big article from one of the, I don't remember if it was the New York Times or Bloomberg. That's who it was, Bloomberg, about the cashless society, and it is coming, and they're getting ready to chuck all the cash. And even China is in works coming up with their own digital currency. It's disappearing, people, and it's going to happen. And it's not going to be some big global crash like we've all been hearing for years now, where everyone's going to be making bank runs. Oh, my God. I don't think that's how it's going to happen. I think it's going to happen as this robot's taking all the jobs. Nobody has a job anymore, but we have to get a cushion. So people, don't panic. Don't panic. Don't riot. We'll just give you money. We'll take care of it. Everyone will get started with their 7,000 qubits. And we'll keep dropping funds in there every month until we get things worked out. And it will placate the masses for a little while until everybody realizes that they have to go down and get their universal health care, because that'll be free too. Government sponsored. Oh, but wait, Johnny, there are no more. I'm trying to remember what they call it. There are no more denying vaccines based on philosophical exemption. Nope, nope, nope. You can't philosophize. You can't be exempted. It's all going to be forced because we're paying for everything. We own you. You know, the comedian, I'm having trouble remembering things today. What was his name? Oh, my God. I loved him so much when I was a kid. Oh, you know what I'm saying. Somebody in chat. Cupid doll. Somebody in chat. What was his name? Holy crap. The comedian. They own you. He was so great. When he died, I was very sad. Somebody will remember. But, you know, they pointed it out. They didn't fully own us before. They owned us between 8 and 5. Factory days, they owned us between 8 and 5. You went, you did your job. And then we had the big recession. We had a small recession, then we had a big recession. It was do more with less, and they got rid of a good part of the jobs. Everybody worked double time. You wanted to keep your job, Jenny. You worked the extra hours, and you shut up because we need to get our profitability back so we don't have to let any more people go, Jenny. And that's what they did, and they got everyone to be okay with working all these extra hours for the same pay. Half their friends lost their jobs, and it's not out there anymore. Well, now we are moving on to this next level, and that is everything is going to go away. But don't worry about it, because they'll take care of it. But remember, there is no free lunch. And once they pay for everything, once you get your free everything, your free internet, your free Obama phone, your free medical care, your free universal basic income, and all you're free to do is sit around and think and look pretty. They own everything about you. Everything. That's when this full push is going to transpire. And it's all coming together at that one intersecting point that Ray calls the singularity. I think that's the singularity. All right, let's see. The gig at Google gives Kurzweil something he never really had before during his long polymathic career, which is money. Yeah, that's what I said. Unlimited budget, Ray. Here you go, little lunatic. Google has taken the profits it earns from pasting ads next to internet searches and uses them to fuel groundbreaking work in areas such as self-driving cars and augmented reality glasses. Perhaps Android smartphones will one day telepathically whisper sweet nothings into our brain. Telepathically, no less. Google could begin selling the Brain Uploader 3000, thus freeing species from its moral shackles. No pressure, Ray. No pressure at all. And this is out of Bloomberg as well. It's a disturbing story. And again, that was from 2012. So now let's fast forward to 2016. And I'm not going to say Kurzweil in particular has anything to do with this, but this push to artificial intelligence and all these tech companies working with all these institutions to try to develop supercomputers that can think and feel and see and touch and all these other human traits to do better than us is on fast forward, guys. Out of phys.org, March 31st, Lawrence Livermore and IBM, remember IBM Watson, collaborate to build a new brain-inspired supercomputer. Now, this is like the third story we've seen in the last couple weeks. All these big tech titans collaborating with all these science institutions, universities, working on building brain-inspired computing. Deep learning. Using neurons. Synthetic neurons and the way neurons work. Lawrence Livermore Laboratory today announced it will receive a first-of-a-kind brain-inspired supercomputing platform for deep learning developed by IBM Research. This is a first of its kind. This is not Watson. This is something new, probably developed through the Connectome project. I believe IBM was involved in that. Based on breakthrough neurosynaptic computer chips called IBM True North, the scalable platform will process the equivalent of 16 million neurons and 4 billion synapses and consume the energy equivalent of a hearing aid battery, a mere 2.5 watts of power. Wow. That's just insane. That's like the Apollo mission having the brains of a 1972 calculator. They got a supercomputer that processes the equivalent of 16 million neurons and 4 billion synapses with the energy equivalent of a hearing aid battery. That means, think about it. See, one of the issues with computing power is that to make it mobile, you got to have battery power. And battery power has always been a problem. Making processors low energy has always been a goal. Lower the energy, the more efficient you can make it. Right? You don't want a processor that sucks energy. And that's why they always had mobile processors for notebook computers versus desktop processors for your honking desktop that's plugged into the wall. Because if they used a desktop processor in a notebook computer, not only would it get hot, because heat is always an issue. They had to do special things. You didn't really have too much. You had more heat sinks and low heat on a notebook processor, but you also had lower energy requirements on that processor, or at least conservation. Anyway, back to the story. The brain-like neural network design of the IBM neuromorphic system, it's a neuromorphic system, is able to infer complex cognitive tasks such as pattern recognition and integrated sensory processing far more efficiently than conventional chips. Sensory processing. Yes, like I said, touching, thinking, hearing. They're trying to give computers our senses. The new system will be used to explore new computing capabilities important to the National Nuclear Security Administration's missions in cybersecurity, stewardship of the nation's nuclear weapon stockpile, and non-proliferation. Now, interesting, too, this announcement came out right on the cusp of Obama having his nuclear conference to make sure that we secure nuclear weapons from terrorists. See, all these little pieces are clicking together. First of all, we had terrorists under every bed and in every closet. We had hackings everywhere, which then gave Obama the excuse to bring the tech corporations all to Washington to work together to save our infrastructure from the scary cyber hackers. Now, you know, we had Janet Napolitano just before she took over as president of the University of California University system warning about how cyber attackers might attack our utility infrastructure, our electric, as well as our nuclear facilities. But wait, wait, what happened just before that? Oh, didn't we have the CIA Israeli developed flame virus? And what was the other virus? I don't remember. There were two of them that attacked the Iranian nuclear facilities. Oh, yes, we did. Those weren't hackers that created that or rogue governments. It was us. But, you know, hey, if we did it, any quote-unquote terrorist out there, wink, could do it. So be afraid, be very afraid. So now we need to have this artificial neural network, neuromorphic system that's going to be responsible for securing our nation's nuclear weapons stockpile from cyber hackers and terrorists. An NSA's Advanced Simulation and Computing Program will evaluate machine learning applications, deep learning algorithms and architectures, and conduct general computing feasibility studies. The Advanced Simulation and Computing Program is a cornerstone of the National Nuclear Security Administration Stockpile Stewardship Program to ensure the safety, security, and reliability of the nation's nuclear deterrent without underground testing. I just saw, too, in Japan. Japan apparently is holding huge amounts of weapons-grade plutonium, which does make me raise an eyebrow. Back to those stories way back in 2011 with what happened to Fukushima Reactor number 3. you know, there was some sort of nuclear explosion there. And if you look at it, yeah, it definitely was a mushroom cloud. And there were all kinds of rumors about Stuxnet. That was the other virus. Stuxnet getting into their reactor, a secret U.S. Nuclear weapons program going on underneath that reactor, the Israelis being involved in sabotaging. There were all these rumors. I don't know. I mean, I read them. I said, well, it's possible. I mean, regardless of how it happened, it's a big fucking mess over there. And I mean, beyond three complete total China syndromes going on with no end in sight. Nobody seems to care. And everyone thinks that, no, it's not affecting anything. But when I saw the story the other day that Japan was shipping huge amounts of weapons-grade plutonium out of Japan to the United States, right as this whole nuclear forum is going on, and now we're announcing this new neuromorphic system from IBM to be in charge. I mean, what is this? There's definitely some crazy shit going on here, people. Neuromorphic computing opens very exciting new possibilities and is consistent with what we see as the future of high-performance computing and simulation at the heart of our national security missions, says Jim Brass, LLNL Deputy Associate Director for Data Science. And the potential capabilities of neuromorphic computing represents, and the machine intelligence that these will be able to change how we do science. Now, let's take a quick look at Lawrence Livermore. For those of you who are not aware of what Lawrence Livermore is, Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory is a federal research facility in Livermore, California, founded by the University of California, ding, run by who? Oh, Jenna Napolitano now. In 1952. It was interesting, too, again, in California, touching that Silicon Valley where all of the big tech titans live. A federally funded research and development center, it is primarily funded by the United States Department of Energy and managed and operated by Lawrence Livermore National Security, which is a partnership of the University of California, Bechtel, ding, Babcock and Wilcox, URS, and Battelle Memorial Institute in affiliation with, Texas A&M University. The laboratory was honored in 2012 by having the synthetic chemical element Livermorium named after it. Its background? The Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory is self-described as a, quote, premier research and development institution for science and technology applied to national security. And its principal responsibility is ensuring the safety, security, and reliability of the nation's nuclear weapons through the application of advanced science, engineering, and technology. The laboratory also applies its special expertise and multidisciplinary capabilities to prevent the proliferation and the use of weapons of mass destruction, bolstering homeland security. Ding! So it makes perfect sense that Jenna Napolitano is the head of the University of California University System. Lawrence Livermore Laboratory is a part of that. And it is tied directly to homeland security, as well as solving other nationally important problems, including energy and environment security, basic science, and economic competitiveness. Yes. Lawrence Livermore is home to many unique facilities and a number of the most powerful computing systems in the world. And now, IBM's neuromorphic synaptic system, apparently. And according to the top 500 list, it includes BlueGene L, which was the fastest supercomputer from 2004 until Los Alamos National Laboratory's IBM Roadrunner supercomputer, surpassed it in 2008. On June 18, 2012, it retook the lead on the latest edition of the list on the world's top 500 supercomputers with IBM Sequoia. So I guess IBM giving Lawrence Livermore mad science gone mad computers is something that they've done throughout history here. IBM Sequoia packing more than 1.5 million custom power cores. And as of 2015, there were now two computer systems that were faster. God forbid, China's Tianhe 2 and Oak Ridge National Laboratory's Titan. It is based in that Tianhe 2 we talked about a while ago. China was using Intel processors to build that supercomputer, and the Department of State stepped in and said, hey, no, hello, you are not getting any more chips, and they banned shipping those Intel processors to China. So China's Tianhe 2, they're either going to have to come up with another chip manufacturer or give up on supercomputing, and I doubt that's going to happen. Maybe tomorrow we'll look at a story about Beidou, that is Google's equivalent in China, who is now working on integrating artificial intelligence into everything. And that'll be interesting. But that, not enough time today. Anyway, so China's Tianhe 2 and Oak Ridge National Laboratories, as of 2015, had the two fastest supercomputers. And now we have the brand new IBM, what are they calling it? Neuromorphic system that is going to be installed there. So anyway, a little bit of history on that. I don't know, guys. And they have now artificial intelligence getting tied into national security, nuclear weapons research labs. They also do plutonium research there. And global security program, we have Janet Napolitano also connected for Homeland Security, the Department of Energy, synthetic biology, other programs that the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory supports, chemistry, materials, and life science research focusing on chemical engineering, nuclear chemistry, material science, biology, and bio-nanotechnology, physics, as well as including condensed matter and high pressure physics, optical science, high energy dense physics, medical physics, biophysics, nuclear particle and accelerator physics. And in the area of energy and environmental science, Livermore's emphasis is on carbon and climate, of course, energy, water, and the environment, as well as a national nuclear waste repository. Their engineering activities include micro and nanotechnologies, lasers, optics, biotechnology, precision engineering, non-destructive characterization modeling, simulation systems, decision science, sensors, imaging, and communications. I mean, is there anything that these guys don't do? It's very frightening. You know, I have like 9 stories for today, and we made it through 3. I'm sorry, guys. So I don't know. You know, we have artificial intelligence, Kurzweil, uploading to the machine, IBM. I just saw now Microsoft with their Skype. For decades, machine learning experts have tried to perfect language translation. You know, this kind of follows along the lines of some of the stuff that Kurzweil was doing, being able to scrape text and find a meaning from the context around it. Well, now Microsoft, as of March 28th, is making huge strides with Skype using machine learning, using their free Skype. Every word that I say is probably feeding their machine to be able to do accurate translations. And that was something that, you know, they've been working on for a long time. Microsoft had their voice activation software way back when, and it still was kind of kludgy. They're getting way better. And it says, even so, Microsoft, Google, Beidou, Facebook, IBM, and many others are vying for supremacy in this difficult field of translation and offering a top-grade voice recognition, guys, biometrics, voice recognition and surveillance, by the way, and translation can become an attractive calling card that helps lock in customers from any other services. And yeah, you know, they're selling this in the story to be about corporate America making a profit, but don't think that the NSA and all of your surveillance companies, as well as your Microsoft Cyber Patrol Center, part of Microsoft, that's working with all of the law enforcement agencies around the globe, wouldn't be very interested in having that brass ring. Be careful what you ask for. All right, last but not least here in the last minute, your future Toyota may know where you're going before you told it. You know, we talked about the new Toyota artificial intelligence data center where they're putting Pratt, I think his last name was, a director from DARPA, in charge. I just read the other day now, they just brought in some other DARPA guy now to the Toyota AI supercomputing center, whatever they're doing. They're building robots in Silicon Valley with their satellite unit in Massachusetts. They are potentially buying the robotics division from Google that's being sold. Toyota's new subsidiary will manage the troves of data collected from its increasingly connected cars. Yes, yeah, self-driving cars are going to be spitting out data. So this is another new division from Toyota on Monday. This was this week. The Japanese carmaker Toyota announced the new subsidiary called Toyota Connected that will manage and mine the data collected from its vehicles. And the company said it would collaborate with who? Oh, Microsoft on the venture. Again, they're all on the West Coast there. Silicon Valley everywhere. The data collected and delivered might include mapping data, engine statistics, and records of driver behavior. Da, da, da. All right, guys. Well, if you can even believe it, 15 seconds left in the show. I think it's Tuesday. Yeah, it's Tuesday. Make sure you stick around. Mr. Kevin Blanch is live up next. Ocelli Effect at 3 p.m. brand new this afternoon. Live with Game On at 7 p.m. 8 are interesting times with Tim Kelly. The Primetime Boys at 9 and at 10 Antimedia with S.M. Gibson. Everyone have an awesome Tuesday.